going to allow. Sir, you were on the floor. Were you down? If it doesn't work, just speak.
Oh, it's all right.
If you are.
Yes. It's fine. I was doing my comment. I said I was trying to attend to answer the question.
Your voice is very clear.
It's not a voice.
Why is the lawyer not at the top?
Who's breaking me? Hey,
Member.
Well, how come?
It's
possibly the DA
member.
Yes, especially the DA. Yeah.
It's a two arrangement, the alliance. I don't know which one is the decision maker. You are the floor, sir.
Yes.
Will you just get faster, quicker?
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
No. Before you come in, I never thought that you are answering a question. Okay. I thought you wanted to add to what your colleague was saying. But if you're going to answer a question, then I must allow members who had wanted to raise certain issues to Madam Shiro, one of them. Yes, you're on the floor.
I'm on the floor.
Yes. And Baba Lunga.
Nothing detailed, but I have, since this process started, had doubts about whether this institution was actually necessary to establish it at all. And South of all, you know, maybe that's just me. I didn't see the need for it to be a government institution. And so I thought, well, let's just see what comes in from the public participation process. Now, of the people who did submit written comment on the bill, not one of them was from the private sector. There was one from the Institute of IT Professionals, or whatever they're called, who talked about it. They were the only sort of non-government, if I can call it non-involved entity that contributed some comment on the bill. And then I looked at the business case. For NSE, whatever it's called. And the funding in here is not clear. It says, okay, money appropriated by Parliament. We've got no idea what that is at this stage, what that's actually going to cost. Revenue including interest, and then donations and contributions. Now, we presume that's going to be donations from the private sector or some other crowd. I don't know who's actually going to fund this. But when I have a look at the business case for NSE, there's no, and this is a document that arrived for us from somewhere, when it's called, there's a table here called investments by the stakeholder. Now one assumes that the stakeholder is the department or the government. There's no contribution from the government in this business case, but there are one, two, three private sector companies, the European Union, the South Korean government, and something called UNDP, which I presume is United Nations. Now, none of those people have actually commented on the bill. None of them. These are the people who are funding it. So none of them have actually said, this is an essential entity for the country, without it the country is going to fail. I see no strong motivation from the ICT sector that we actually need this institution. So I have, you know, just I think perhaps consolidated my long-standing concerns that this is not necessary at all as a government entity. And to me, it initially seemed like it was being established to safeguard the jobs of the Broadcasting Vocational Institute, which was NAMESA, which trained at no cost to the students, people for the broadcasting sector, some of whom found employment in the sector and some who didn't, and for the Satellite Skills Institute that was being jettisoned by the Department of Science and Technology. So obviously those people needed their jobs secured. So I'm sorry, I just don't see a necessity for this. I need perhaps convincing that A, it can be funded, And basically, who needs it? That's my comment.
Well, the questions that you've raised, Madam Shin, are very important, but none of the people present here will be best placed to respond to the question. Perhaps we should park the questions, and then when the department is here, then respond to the questions.
Thank you, Chair. Just to deal with some of the subject matters, in terms of the establishment of the board, Clause 6, Clause 6.3.C, not less than 6, not more than 10 members, does that, it's not clear to me, does that include the chairperson and the deputy chairperson? Say if we had a board that had a minimum of 6 people, would you have your chair and your deputy chair as part of that 6? Would they count as part of that? Because if so, perhaps that clause C needs to be moved to clause A. And if it's not, then just some clarity, please. Then I noticed that clause 7.2, a member may not serve for more than 2 terms. Does that then include the CEO, for example, as a member of the board? Is he also then not allowed to serve for 2 terms? Then I noticed one of the disqualifications for members of the board is if the board member is not a South African citizen. But there's no reference in the establishment and appointment of the board that says board members must be South African citizens. I can't see the clause there. Perhaps if you can find it, you can assist me. Then in terms of you've got employees of INESI and taking these employees in, saying they must be, I'm just interested, must pay the employees of INESI such remuneration allowances, subsidies and other benefits as are consistent with that paid in the public sector. Is that a standard clause that we insert in legislation? I'm just curious. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I am then going to allow yourselves, gentlemen. Lady, the other lady, you didn't have anything that you wanted to raise.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and the Member of Parliament. My name is Nompo from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors.
Chief State
Law Advisors.
Okay. Or you are the people who sign things off. Gentlemen, you're on the floor.
Thank you, Chair. So we can try a few.
Oh, he wanted to help you with the first question.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My name is Bongango. My audible.
Try.
Yeah. Firstly, we must indicate, as my colleague already indicated, we reiterate rather, to the fact that some of these questions are sitting around here may not be in a position to answer them because they need the technical team to be able to actually give substantive answers. But to the extent that we are able to answer a certain question, we'll try our best to answer those questions.
But those outside the lawyers, they are for you.
Well,
they were all common directors, so that they speak to the PR.
If I may take make an attempt to the first question regarding the socio-economic study. The committee, the chairperson and the committee recall that in our last appearance 2 weeks ago, we did indicate that the study was conducted. But as I've said, these are the details we can be able to verify with our colleagues who are technical in this matter. Some of the question I will also ask if we can be given a chance to go back and look at them in detail so that we can give a detailed response, maybe together with our colleagues who are technical.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. So the last ones first. How section clause 6.3 is read is that the 6 and 10 are, or let's put it, the chair and the deputy chair are over and above the 65th. So you'll have, you could potentially have 10, plus the chair, the deputy chair, that already makes it 12, plus the CEO and the CFO that could make it 13. So there's potentially 4, so it'll be a total board of ranging between 10 and 14. That's how we read that.
I don't know if that's a dialogue between the chair. Would not perhaps be better than to use the phrase executive and non-executive in there, just to draw a line between those different types of directors?
Jefferson, it's possible to reword that clause, and can be written in a few different ways, to be honest. This is one way, but certainly the drafters can draft it in different ways. I think in more than one clause here, I see perhaps more character to be inserted in terms of executive versus non-executive. That relates also to the second question the honourable member asked, because if it's not clear from clause 7 that this is actually intended for non-executive members, then perhaps that's the kind of wording that's needed there to make it clear. We think it's clear, or it can at the very least be inferred from 3 that talks about the minister extending the period and so on, and it's only the minister's role is in relation to the non-executive. So you can interpret it correct, but to make it very clear, it might be better to be clear on words like executive or non-executive. In case of clause 7, you clearly then state the non-executive for a job. Chair, on the matter of South African citizens, it's not reflected, as far as I remember, in the appointment clause, but it's one of those disqualification criteria that we typically find. So the things that are in the disqualification clause, they're not repeated in an appointment clause. You wouldn't, in the appointment clause, say that members should be rehabilitated from intolerance. That should be, it's just the opposite of the point, so that's why it should be sufficient to leave it in the disqualification clause. I think it's reasonably consistent in legislation that some of the SOCs are aligned with the Public Service Act. I know that over the years, ICASA has similarly followed some of the guidelines in the Public Service Act. I know you guys have done something similar, but perhaps this could refer to our content colleagues in the SOC oversight to give us a more precise approach. But this links to the other question, which was from the parliamentary legal advisor, whether NMISA is subject to the Public Service Act. We had the benefit of quickly phoning back home. So NMISA is not subject to the Public Service Act, and it's not intended that an issue would be subject to the Public Service Act. However, there are some clauses here that say it will align itself with in terms of salary and so on with what is typically paid in the public service. So the example we cited was right now that though the NMISA, for example, is not under the government employees pension fund, but they have applied under the GPF to become members under GPF. So it's trying to align, I think, with the public service. Our colleague had quite difficult questions, and I don't believe we have all the answers, but from my understanding and maybe I heard the wrong clause, but if the parliamentary legal advisor was referring to clause 21 sub 8, that one refers to all policies, procedures and processes governing the NMISA prior to the commencement of this Act are deemed to have been prescribed in terms of this Act. Is that the clause that we are talking about? How I understand that is, for example, the NMISA as an organization may have adopted their own internal policy that now says we follow the prescript of the SMS handbook, for example, in the public service, or we we have a policy that we, whatever the disciplinary code in the public service, that's our policy. So that's what this kind of clause does. It tries to ensure continuation that any such existing policies and procedures are recognized during this transition to the new organization until it's then changed under this new regime in this new legislation. Which is linked, I guess, to a practical and factual question as well, what are these policies exactly, and should we just take note of them as we I want to actually avoid the question on clause 6.8 on socioeconomic profile, because I, to be honest, am not sure of the answer to it. I think it could be. So the question was, clause 6 sub 8 says, whereupon invoking the processes outlined in subsections 4 to 6, candidates possessing the required expertise and socioeconomic profile are not found, the minister may direct an alternative process. And the parliamentary advisor asked, what does that mean, socioeconomic profile? I think in my mind, I thought it's linked to the sub 4 perhaps on the broad representativity of the demographics of South Africa, but that's certainly not clear to me, and perhaps except if the State Board Advisor has a better understanding of that, is something that can perhaps be improved.
Yeah, she signed it off, so she must have to.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. In terms of section 6, subsection 8, some of the matters is policy issues here. So what I have to look at is legal and constitutional issues. And now, here where I think what they are meaning when they say socioeconomic profiles, maybe they were looking at the demographics of the Republic of South Africa, that who are made of many, many races here in South Africa, and there are those who are disadvantaged. So maybe they were looking for those who are disadvantaged, however, they were having all these qualifications that they are putting here. However, in terms of this but it's just my opinion, Chairperson, but in terms of this, it does not take the bill any further. It's something that it's a little bit vague. We can take it out if the department agree with me. Because if we say possessing the required experience, that is the experience that we have already tabulated on the above clauses, then that socioeconomic profile does not make anything further. It's a little bit vague to me. I don't know.
Okay, let's flag it. Let's flag it, especially for the parliamentary legal advisor. I think that remains. Let's keep it flagged until we can agree, because the process is now our process. So have it remaining as clarified matter so that we can see how we do this. So you find with the rest other things that you will have to do. Baba Martin, just before you come in. The issue I wanted to raise, there's a lot of things I would like to raise, but I think we'll raise them as we go through the bill. Now for the clarity issues. Now, earlier on when you did the introduction, I tend to forget your name all the time.
Alf.
Yeah. Alf, earlier on when you did the introduction, you responded to a query that we had raised in the past. Whether the bill, you responded to the bill with regards to the company there. Something that we had raised, I think, in the last meeting in a way. Now you refer to something very interesting that in the bill we have not reworked the PFMEA attributes that refer to them. I want you to explain to me on your subclause 9 of clause 6. When you talk about the judiciary responsibility, now you obviously not defined them here, but you referred to. And I know that the company that is one act that has got, that has elaborated on the judiciary responsibility. Now here, on this clause, where you refer to this one, where are we going to derive the clarity on the on that question?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's a valid question, and it's perhaps something that we must look at. There is no, ordinarily these laws have a clear section that deals in detail with fiduciary duty. In fact, usually it's a matter of mirroring a lot of what's written in the Companies Act or borrowing from the corporate governance in the public sector document to state those fiduciary duties. So based on this, it's not very clearly outlined. There are basic snippets, I think, here and there that gives one a sense, but I couldn't see a specific clause that outlines what the board's fiduciary duties are.
Okay, Madam, you will flag that aspect as well. Baba Mackenzie?
Thank you, Chair. Without treading on any legal toes, when we were talking about socioeconomic profiles, perhaps the solution there would just be to write suitable in front of candidates. So you would say in subsection 46, suitable candidates possessing the required expertise are not found. Or suitable candidates are
that
not found.
Deal with.
Thank you.
Just one
clarity question. On 5.3F, establish ICT networks across post-school training and education institutions. You know, specifically in an ICT frame, networks can mean all sorts of things. It can mean physical networks, it can be social networks, economic networks. Perhaps we just need to be a lot clearer on what we're talking about there, otherwise we'll have NEC rolling out broadband fiber to the office. Just saying. Thank you, Chair.
I guess a related question to what Mr. McKenzie has raised is the issue that you are out raising, where the issue of the digital, whatever, you know, multimedia issue. I think this matter that he's raising, the ICT, because I think I agree with you that we use these words.
Exactly.
We just throw them in wherever we found it's nice and beautiful English. So I think let's work on them, take into account what you just made, so that when we finally walk through the bill, we are able to make sure that everything that we are trying to make sense and we are doing the thing. Put the question by in our next engagement, which may not necessarily happen now, but once we start to work on the bill, the first time we meet, because we're not going to meet next week, unfortunately, because the council of the meeting, I have said, we're not going to meet next week, but the first meeting that we have, the question that he has raised, very important issues. Let's have someone from the department responding to the questions, and the lady from the legislature here, Parliament, must obviously help us, especially on these legal issues. It's a pity that we won't have time because we are already eating into your time. I don't want to keep you long, and you need to make sure that you find something in the process.
You can just ask
me
a question about our program.
Yes.
Okay, so we're not going to meet next week. Are we going to meet the following week on the fourth industrial revolution? Or the
first no. We will not meet. We will not. Let me just take now the remainder. Yeah, we'll put it in our next term.
Lots of thinking. You obviously supporting the campaign much.
You call yourself out.
Thank you.